It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
It's a yes or no question. Can you assure Americans today you won't tailor your features to help Joe Biden in the upcoming election?
We support work that campaigns do.
I understand that. We all do all kinds of online social media. Can you today assure Americans you will not tailor your features in any way to help, specifically help one candidate over other? And this what I'm concerned about is you helping Joe Biden over President Trump.
We won't do any work, to politically tilt anything one way or the other. It's against our core values.
Can you assure us today you're not going to try to configure your features as Ms. Murillo said you did for Clinton in 16? Can you assure us today you're not going to do the same thing for Joe Biden in 2020?
You have my commitment.
All right, that was Sundar Pichai for Google in that hearing yesterday at the U.S. House Judiciary Antitrust Subcommittee, and Jim Jordan questioning him. And that exchange was pretty typical. You had some very hard-hitting questions from Republicans and some from Democrats, but their issue is different. They're not concerned about any censorship or blocking out or meddling with conservatives and their messages during an election year. They're not conservative. In fact, they're not concerned about that. But the answer that Sundar Pichai gave Jim was also, Congressman Jordan, was also very typical, kind of a non-answer. There were some great moments in that hearing. I wish I had time to play all of them, but I do want to give you some highlights. Now, we know that after 2016, the media companies, we know because we have video, actually, of the morning of the election of Donald Trump. We had that in Silicon Valley, the employees weeping and just going on and on. We have, back and forth between them. And they determined that the media companies in their own individual worlds determined that they were not going to let conservatives use their social media platforms to win another election. And so that's what they've been doing. They've been, remember I had a Facebook whistleblower on about a month ago, and he told us something like 70% of conservative content is blocked on Facebook. Now, Mark Zuckerberg, kind of denied that yesterday, but we know that Facebook just took down that video of Tea Party Patriots' sponsorship of those doctors, 15 or so of them who came to D.C. and did a press conference and a really long briefing. By the way, it's on our Facebook page, and if you want to see that, and I hope you do, Breitbart has done a great covering of that, and we posted that on our Facebook yesterday or the day before. In fact, Adam, let's post that again today because people have asked about that. So this committee hearing took place, and you've got Jeff Bezos from Amazon, you got Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook, Sundar Pichai from Google, and Tim Cook from Apple. All right, it's huge. I don't need to explain, do I? I don't think I need to explain that. It's a huge, they represent a huge money and power, unparalleled ever in the history of mankind, the power that they wield over the world. I think Google has over 90%, more than 90% of the world's market in terms of searches. So they control what the world sees and what they hear. And by the way, I have to interject, a couple of you emailed me and said, I told you a few days ago that Breitbart has been purged from Breitbart from search results now, and a couple of you wrote back to me and said, "No, I could still find them." It's complicated, and that's how these social media giants get away with stuff because I don't pretend to understand all the complexities, and they can easily dodge on complexities. So here's the thing: yes, if you Google Breitbart, you'll find Breitbart. I'm not sure if you must be able to find Breitbart.com, but here's the thing: in the search engine, people around the globe and in the United States are not searching Breitbart Joe Biden, Breitbart, China stealing, intelligence of the United States, so forth and so on. People don't search that way for the most part unless they're fans of Breitbart. And if they are, they would have that, they would go right to Breitbart. But if you're looking in general, you want to search a story about the presidential election or about a Senate race or anything that's going on in the world, Breitbart does not come up. That's the point. They do not let Breitbart or Daily Caller, and there's a long list of them, I'm just giving you two, they block them from being part of their search. So unless you know about Breitbart, you will not get their opinion about what's happening in a Senate race or a presidential election. You will get New York Times, Washington Post, Time Magazine. You'll get all the leftist outlets. So it's stacked. You understand? So that you, if you're just a regular citizen, you don't listen to me, you'll never think to look for Breitbart. You might not even know about Breitbart. So it's not a fair search. So they're stacking the deck. So that's why you can still, yes, if you're looking for Breitbart on Google, it'll still come up. But it won't come up if you don't know about Breitbart and you don't search specifically for Breitbart. And even then, I'd argue that it's limited. It certainly is for the Daily Caller. So anyway, that I hope that explains it in my fast, quick way of trying to explain something very complex. Jillian Turner actually did a great report on that hearing yesterday, and I want you to listen to her because she'll give you some more details that she won't do it as rapidly as I will, and maybe you'll understand it better. Here it is.
Congressman Jim Jordan got right to the heart of what Republican lawmakers have been wanting to grill these big tech execs about for 2 years.
Big tech's out to get conservatives. That's not a suspicion. That's not a hunch. That's a fact.
Jordan put Google's Sundar Pichai directly on the firing line.
Is Google going to tailor its features to help Joe Biden?
You have my commitment. It's always been true, and we'll continue to conduct ourselves in a neutral way.
Other lawmakers quickly lasered in on Zuckerberg.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Who pushed back hard on accusations that Facebook has censored Republicans.
Our goal is to offer a platform for all ideas.
But asked about Twitter's censorship of Donald Trump Jr. this week for posting a video advocating hydroxychloroquine to cure COVID-19, Zuckerberg hedged.
We do not want to become the arbiters of truth. I think that would be a bad position for us to be in and not what we should be doing.
Democrats had a different axe to grind, anti-competitiveness. Chairman David Cicilline accusing all four companies of becoming so big, they're killing the tech industry.
Open markets are predicated on the idea that if a company harms people, consumers, workers, and business partners, we'll choose another option. We're here today because that choice is no longer possible.
Apple's Tim Cook made the case his company doesn't dominate the market.
We have fierce competition at the developer side and the customer side, which is essentially, it's so competitive, I would describe it as a street fight for market share in the smartphone business.
Wildcard Jeff Bezos, who'd never faced off against lawmakers during his 25-year reign at Amazon until today, tried to stay out of the fray, but got in hot water anyway.
Does Amazon ever access and use third-party seller data when making business decisions?
We have a policy against using seller-specific data to aid our private label business, but I can't guarantee you that policy has never been violated.
All right, so that's just a very nutshell presentation of what happened. I think the problem, of course, is that these CEOs are so much more knowledgeable than the congressmen, as smart as they are. And it's very hard to come back. Like, they'll always give some sort of a bland answer that seems, especially Matt Gaetz had an incredible exchange with Sundar Pichai from Google. And the first part of it, Matt really faces, well, a couple of things I want to tell you that Matt confronted him on. He confronted Bezos. Sorry, I'm switching people, but I want to make sure I say this. Jeff Bezos from Amazon on why in the world he removed all of these charities from the Amazon Smile program. You know, in the Amazon Smile program, you could donate a certain percentage of your the thing that you bought from certain charities, and they have eradicated conservative outlets. AFA can't beat, you can't donate to AFA through Smile anymore. And so Matt asked about that. There's so much to talk about. We know the foot, the boot is on the scale. We know that it's not a stretch. Now, Matt also asked Sundar Pichai from Google about why they were refusing to work with the American military. And he goes into a program that they were working on Let's see what it's called. I gotta remember. It's called a Project Maven, and Google refused to work with the American military. So then Matt pivots. Of course, Sundar has always a silky smooth answer. There's an answer for everything. It's the algorithms. It's this. Oh, we don't know. We will not do that. We will remain neutral. We will, you know, it's just, it doesn't actually ever prove to be actually true. But they were under oath yesterday, so I don't know if anyone's going to hold them accountable or not. I don't know. But this is Matt Gaetz's second exchange with him, and this is about China. And this is partially why our holding them accountable is so important in Clip 7.
You mentioned earlier in your in the discussion about China that your engagement in China was very limited, but yet Google has an AI China Center. The Chinese Academy of Sciences has published a paper saying that enhanced the targeting capabilities of China's J-20 fighter aircraft. You collaborate with Chinese universities that take millions upon millions of dollars from the Chinese military. Matter of fact, one of your Googlers, Fifi Li, while under your employ, was cited in Chinese state media saying, China is like a sleeping giant. When she wakes, she will tremble the world. The former Secretary of Defense, Mr. Shanahan, said that the lines have been blurred in China between commercial and military application. And as Mr. Buck cited, General Dunford says that your company is directly aiding the Chinese military. And Peter Thiel, who actually serves on Mr. Zuckerberg's board at Facebook, said that Google's activities with China are treasonous. He accused you of treason. So why would an American company with American values so directly aid the Chinese military, but have ethical concerns about working alongside the U.S. military on Project Maven? And I understand your point about cybersecurity and those things, but Project Maven was a specific way to ensure that our troops are safe on the battlefield. And if you have no problem making the J-20 Chinese fighter more effective in its targeting, why wouldn't you want to make America as effective?
Congressman, with respect, we are not working with the Chinese military. It's absolutely false. I had a chance to meet with General Dunford personally. We have clarified what we do in China compared to our peers. It's very, very limited in nature. Our AI work in China is limited to a handful of people working on open source projects, and happy to share and engage with the office to explain our work in China further.
Gosh, I mean, when the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff says that an American company is directly aiding China, when you have an AI center, when you're working with universities, and when your employees are talking about China trembling the world, it seems to really call into question your commitment to our country and our values.
Yeah, so that was a right on, Congressman Gaetz. And by the way, the president tweeted, "If Congress doesn't bring fairness to big tech, which they should have done years ago, I will do it myself with executive orders. In Washington, it has been all talk and no action for years, and the people of our country are sick and tired of it." And of course, he's putting that to action. I told you about that yesterday. I want to move on to something very quickly. There's a firestorm in California over what's happening with churches. There's a threat now to... The California governor and mayor have threatened to cut off power and water to churches if they don't obey California's recent coronavirus enforcement order for them to all be shut down. John MacArthur has defied this order. Not the water thing. That's the latest. But John MacArthur is meeting. Their place is packed, and he has basically said that we have to obey God rather than man. We're not obeying these orders. I find that so amazing and refreshing. You might remember, I certainly do, that John MacArthur has been one of those pastors who said that we should not be engaged in public policy. I've had, you know, a lot of problems with him saying that through the years, because I do have great respect for him. And now he's in the crosshairs of something that's very much public policy, direct conflict. And so God bless him for his courage. The churches in California are under tremendous pressure right now. And that, you know, portends not well for any of us. They used to always say what happens in California comes to the rest of the country, and that is often true. And we are seeing that in Virginia. So I wanted to give you updates on COVID. I will tell you this, Sweden did not use masks. Sweden did not use social distancing. And now they're down to zero deaths in just 77 cases. It's called herd immunity. And that's what we're getting in this country. Well, all the cases are spreading. That's a good thing. We want herd immunity. Be back right after this.
Well, these are certainly tough, tough times, aren't they? Hi, it's Michael Woolworth with Bible League International, engaging the world with God's Word for more than 80 years at only $5 a Bible. You know, I'm grateful that God has given Bible League a platform for more than 8 decades to address the other pandemic, and that's the shortage of Bibles all over the world in places like Asia, Africa, the Middle East, and Latin America. In fact, at Bible League, we determined that as few as 1 Christian in 10 has a Bible. What's that mean? That during this pandemic, many evangelical Christians elsewhere in the world cannot open their Bible and be reminded of God's promises, like 1 Peter 5:7, cast your cares on Him, for He cares for you. But you know, during this time of sheltering in place, we can shelter in grace. Learn how you can be a blessing to believers around the world praying for a Bible by visiting sendbiblesnow.org. That's sendbiblesnow.org, or by calling Bible League at 800-YES-WORD, 800-YES-WORD.
In His image, delighting in God's plan for gender and sexuality is coming soon.
My dad walked in the door and he said, Denise, I want to become a woman.
I struggled with my identity all the way through my life, lived 8 years as Laura Jensen until I found the Lord Jesus Christ.
The issues are unavoidable. They're on the news.
The White House in rainbow colors.
They're in our legislation.
The Texas bathroom bill.
In our schools.
Drag queen story hour.
Our entertainment, our social media.
We are taking biologically healthy young children and putting them at risk.
Every church in America is facing this. As Christians, we can't sit this one out.
Is it really possible that I can experience change?
The fact that there's a struggle doesn't mean that you're on the wrong path. Obeying God is a struggle. Holiness is a struggle.
There is hope for you. God loves you.
In His image, from American Family Studios, coming soon.
And you are made in the image of God.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
These challenging times have shown a college degree is more important than ever. But if the loss of Virginia's tuition assistance grant for certain new online students is holding you back, Liberty University is here to help. We're stepping in to replace your lost VTAG funds with our LU Tag Award and combining it with a $3,600 undergraduate transfer student scholarship or our already low first responder and military discounts to save you up to 60% on your degree. We've got this, Virginia. Learn more by texting LU Tag to 49595. That's LU Tag to 49595.
What a strange time in American history. Right is wrong, wrong is right. Our values have been turned upside down. That's the only way to explain what's happening in St. Louis, where a prosecutor funded by George Soros has declared war on a law-abiding homeowner. Mark McCloskey and his wife are now facing felony gun charges after they defended their historic mansion against a rampaging mob. Prosecutor Kim Gardner said the McCloskeys put the mob in danger. But in reality, it was the mob who put the McCloskeys in danger. They tore down a wrought iron fence. They stormed into a private neighborhood, trespassing on a private street. They threatened to burn down the McCloskeys' home and kill the family dog. So the McCloskeys did what any right-thinking American would do when an angry mob shows up at your front door. Be sure to catch my national radio show noon to 3 Eastern, or you can download the entire show online at toddstarnes.com.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
38 people unmasked Michael Flynn's name 49 times in a 2-month time frame. 7 people at the Treasury Department unmasked Michael Flynn's name. Is this an issue that Mr. Durham is looking into?
I've asked another U.S. attorney to look into the issue of unmasking because of, you know, the high number of unmaskings and some that do not readily appear to have been in the line of normal business.
Wait a minute. I want to be clear. So there is another investigation on that issue specifically going on at the Justice Department right now?
Yes.
Wow, that's great. So Mr. Durham is looking at how the whole Trump-Russia thing started. You have another U.S. attorney. Can you give us that U.S. attorney's name, or is that something you're comfortable doing?
John Bash of Texas.
John Bash of Texas is looking specifically at the fact.
At unmasking.
38 people, 49 times, unmasked Michael Flynn's name, and probably other unmaskings that took place in the final days of the Obama-Biden administration. Is that accurate?
Actually, a much longer period of time.
Even before that?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. I appreciate that. That's information that the committee did not know.
Wow, that was a real showstopper. And you know, the fact that Jim Jordan didn't know about it made it even more of a showstopper, because we kind of think these guys Mark Meadows and others who were on the Freedom Caucus, you know, knew all of this inside information. And this is the first time he'd heard of that. So that was in the Attorney General's hearing on Tuesday. And by the way, there are many, many important takeaways from Bill Barr's testimony. The Daily Signal has written a great piece on it. Six big takeaways from the Attorney General's Capitol Hill testimony. I can't get to the other five, but we will put that on our Facebook page so that you can see. So many things have been unfolding. So many things have been revealed about the I think, treasonous behavior of officials in the Obama administration. Email by Peter Strzok, information that the FBI knew more than even they have said they knew. Criminal acts, I think, potentially. And that's why I want to take this time to kind of catch up, because so much of the news has swallowed up our airtime on the riots and all the other things. And so I've asked Chris Farrell. No, a group has really been as vociferous and relentless on trying to get to the bottom of what's happening. What happened with the accusations on the involvement with Russia, the alleged accusations, then Judicial Watch. Judicial Watch is just amazing. I think all of us know that. I meet people I even know casually, or I know from other parts of the country, and they say, oh, that Judicial Watch, I give money to them. And so they have been on the front lines. And Chris Farrell is their director of investigation and research for Judicial Watch. He's a former military intelligence officer. And he writes and studies and researches all this vociferously, and I've asked him to join us this morning. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Great to be with you, Sandy. Thanks very much.
Chris, I know that you've been beyond frustrated that U.S. Attorney John Durham has not released his report. Did that revelation in the hearing 2 days ago give you any kind of encouragement or hope?
Yeah, I mean, it's encouraging. You know, but what I really need to see are not even reports. I need to see indictments. Time is ticking. You know, the closer we get to November, any sort of legal action, any impaneling of a grand jury, an indictment of any of these corrupt Obama officials, the left will scream that it's a political stunt trying to influence the election. I understand that this is a complex investigation that has all sorts of angles to it and all sorts of, you know, it's just a complex investigation. I get that. But even what's publicly available, information Judicial Watch has turned up, frankly, there's sufficient grounds, probable cause, that threshold has been reached to impanel a grand jury and indict some people. And I can think of people that, you know, in my judgment, would certainly be eligible for that. You know, people like Comey and Brennan, McCabe, Strzok. You know, all these sort of these key figures that are now sadly household names. And they've bragged about how they bent or twisted or broke the rules. Comey's laughed about it. I mean, these are extraordinarily arrogant people who really abuse their authority.
Oh, I completely agree with you, Chris. And let me just interject that Chris has written an article about this. Obamagate indictments are overdue. And we'll put that on our Facebook page as well, because no doubt we won't get to every detail today. I was shocked, really, Chris, that Peter Strzok, who was, you know, he was up to his ears in the Clinton email scandal covering for Hillary Clinton. And then, of course, he was up to his ears. And we know now by his own hand that he knew the Russian collusion was totally a story, made up story. He led both of those things, the cover up for Clinton and the coming after President Trump with a vengeance. And now he was fired from the FBI, and that's it. And now we read that he's going to be releasing a book on Russia and Trump and how Trump was an agent of Russia before the election. There has to be some way, in your own mind, what charges should be brought against Peter Strzok.
Well, I mean, there's a statute, a federal criminal statute, on what's essentially abuse of power, right? Where he unlawfully took his authority as an FBI agent and went way beyond the scope of what his authority was and engaged in a criminal conspiracy to unseat the president. I mean, and that's at the heart of all of this, is that these agents have, look, a sworn officer like that is sort of, you know, one millionth of the Constitution, right? They're actually a living fragment of the Constitution, the authority they have to you know, detain people, to arrest them, to question them, to carry out that executive authority. And he took that, and he so grossly abused it and twisted it, perverted it, in an effort to pursue his own political ideology and to do, as he texted his girlfriend, Lisa Page, you know, they had to stop Trump. They were going to, you know, prevent him from becoming president. And we saw them attempt to do that. And that was against the Trump campaign, the Trump transition, and then the Trump presidency. They were relentless.
You know, Lindsey Graham just came out. Well, he's leading the charge on this. He's the guy heading the Judiciary Committee who doesn't seem to be willing to really do much of any. Likes to talk, but he hasn't done much. But he came out, what, 2 days ago, something like that, saying that there were new notes now that will show the FBI lied. What is all that about?
I wish I knew. You know, Lindsey Graham, you know, bless him. He talks a great game, and there have been times when he's kind of stepped into the breach and done the right thing. But with respect to this particular issue, boy, has he talked and talked and talked and really done very little. Thankfully, in the last couple of weeks, he did release a couple of documents that really exposed the fraud that the American public has been subjected to for years now. And the documents are quite damning. They do show that, you know, this character Strzok, it's Strzok's commentary on a New York Times piece. The New York Times wrote some outrageously false and misleading hit piece on the president. And you have Strzok's notations on the margins explaining how the reporting's wrong, that there was no contact with Russian intelligence officers, that there was no evidence or indication that anyone in the Trump circle had any, you know, inappropriate or unlawful contact with any foreign organization or intelligence service. And so these are Strzok's own notes, you know, commentary on a New York Times report that was just fabrication and lies. And Graham released that, and, you know, thank goodness. But frankly, he could have done and had and really should have done much, much more to knock down this hysterical narrative that's been running, you know, for years now.
Yeah, and hamstrung a duly elected president. Look, people also often characterize this in personal terms for President Trump, and no doubt it's been a horrendous experience for him. But I always try to make the broader point that it's about attacking America. It's undermining, it's undermined our economy. It's undermined all the good work that could have been done and still is being done in spite of that to reverse some horrible things that happened during the 8 years of Obama and the years of Clinton before that. So there's been tremendous harm to the country by these actions.
Sandy, this has an impact all over the country. So this kind of really sick mentality, this fixation on Trump personally, has had an impact on everything from the use of prophylactic medicines in treating the pandemic, all the way over to the other side of the spectrum, where now federal agents are being ordered to abandon their courthouse in Portland, Oregon, so that the mob can burn it down. I mean, this is insanity, and it's all fixated on, you know, President Trump says A, and that means everyone has to run in the opposite direction and say Z, Z. I mean, it's a knee-jerk reaction to attack and vilify the president, but the impact is public. You know, it affects public health. It affects public safety. It's craziness.
It is craziness, and that's why they call it Trump derangement syndrome, and it's really... It's an actual thing that we have seen in the streets and the pundits in Washington, many of them. But I want to talk now. I mentioned the Barr investigation that's being we learned about by U.S. Attorney John Bash into the unmaskings, and that ties into a suit that you guys have Judicial Watch has issued, and that is records about that famous Obama Oval Office meeting, and it was in January, right before President Bush Trump took his position. He was elected, but he wasn't in the Oval Office yet. It was President Obama, Vice President Biden, Susan Rice, Sally Yates, James Comey, John Brennan, James Clapper, and other law enforcement officials. So why are you so keen on getting more records about that meeting? What is it you're expecting to find?
Well, because we know even from what's publicly available, in part what we've already uncovered through our own work, but there's other testimony as well and other documents that have been released that show that this is essentially a meeting of the ringleaders, of the anti-Trump ringleaders, that President Obama personally had knowledge of and approved Comey going up to Trump Tower and lying to the incoming president and trying to manufacture some kind of a phonied up entrapment of him that he would say something or do something inappropriate. This is the heart of the crazy Russia hoax. And they're all, frankly, yucking it up. They're having a lot of laughs about how they're going to really try to screw over President Trump. This is the most insidious and really wickedly evil cabal, this meeting of the senior leadership of the government scheming on how they're going to try to manufacture a setup of the incoming president. And they're laughing about it. You know, they tell Comey, well, you know, good luck. You get to go up and go meet the guy and brief him tomorrow. Ha, ha, ha. And, you know, it's just, and some folks were supposedly caught by surprise. Allegedly, Sally Yates didn't know that there was this ongoing investigation. I don't know that I believe that or not. But certainly all the key leaders, Brennan from CIA, Clapper from the Director of National Intelligence, Comey, the FBI director, you know, Biden, who wants to become president, he's in there dreaming up claims against General Flynn saying they should prosecute him for the Logan Act. I mean, this is a wild, weird meeting, and they're all in it. They're all discussing how they're trying to sabotage the incoming president.
And in any other world, in any other time and place in this country, that would have been treason, Chris. You can't, I mean, Watergate was, you would have thought Nixon had taken out a gun and shot people, but he didn't. It was actually, compared to this, nothing. And yet the press thinks this is fine.
Keystone Cops compared to this thing.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's why you guys are trying to get to the bottom of that. Now, interestingly enough, you know, the Democrats were grilling General Barr on Tuesday, and they were asking him, demanding of him, that he pledge he would not release the results of the Durham report before the election. And he point blank said, I will not promise that. And so I know we've been over this ground, but did you sense from that maybe he is actually going to do that?
You know, I don't know. I think he was just trying to preserve all of his options, but he was not going to make some pledge that would then turn into a gotcha or a you lied to Congress or, you know, some hysterical claim down the road. So I think that mostly he was trying not to be boxed into something that, you know, some unenforceable, ridiculous unilateral pledge that, you know, he would or would not do something just because some Democrat congressman, you know, is having a little temper tantrum up on the dais.
Chris, we only have a minute left, but I kind of want to ask you, you've really poured your heart and soul into this, and for almost a couple of decades, I think about the Clinton mess. What keeps you going on this? Because there's more discouragement than there is encouragement.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been at Judicial Watch for 21 years, so a long time, and it is a vocation to me, right? This is not a job. It is, it's my life's work, and so you know, a long, long time ago, I guess almost 37 years ago, you know, I raised my right hand and I took an oath to defend the Constitution. And what I've done since then has sort of shifted and changed over time. But there's no expiration date on that oath. And so it's taken different forms. You know, so when I was an Army officer, you know, that was one way in which I carried out that oath. But you know, for the last 21 years, I've been at Judicial Watch, and that oath still applies to me, and so I'm just doing it a different way with a different organization, and you know, so I'm gonna protect the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and that's what I'm gonna do.
Could I just say that I think things are being held together by very thin threads, and not the least of which can that be Judicial Watch and your fine work, Chris, and other patriots in Washington just working hand over fist constantly, even at great cost to them, to try to save this country. So thank you so much. Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
Exposing Washington. Exposing Washington. With Walker Wildman.
And here they are testifying that Donald J. Trump should be impeached. They've never even met him. Happens every day. You do this, I'll do this. That's how Washington works.
Exposing Washington.
These bureaucrats think that they're in charge.
Exposing Washington. Each Saturday at 2:30 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
The purpose of government is to secure God-given or inalienable rights to man.
America's premier historian, David Barton.
John Dickinson, who's also a signer of the Constitution, he said, an inalienable right is a right which God gave to you and which no inferior power has a right to take away.
Wall Builders Live captures the ideas of the Founding Fathers and then applies those ideas to the issues of today. Sunday morning at 11:30 Central on American Family Radio.
We must obey God rather than men. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. California Governor Gavin Newsom ordered churches closed indefinitely in at least 32 counties in the state. To which Pastor John MacArthur and the elders of Grace Community Church responded, "The biblical order is clear. Christ is Lord over Caesar, not vice versa. Christ, not Caesar, is head of the church. Therefore, in response to the recent state order requiring churches in California to limit or suspend all meetings indefinitely, we, the pastors and elders of Grace Community Church, respectfully inform our civic leaders that they have exceeded their legitimate jurisdiction, and faithfulness to Christ prohibits us from observing the restrictions." Amen, Pastor MacArthur. Amen.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Dr. Fauci and the deep state demonized hydroxychloroquine, or HCQ, from day one. Don't let them lie to you. HCQ is cheap and it works. Dr. Harvey Risch, an epidemiologist at Yale and author of 300 peer-reviewed publications, says that thousands of coronavirus patients are needlessly dying because they aren't being treated with it. Meanwhile, Dr. Fauci is running interference for Big Pharma because there's a $19 billion payday from a vaccine. But Dr. Risch says this about HCQ: when this inexpensive oral medication is given early in the course of illness, it has been shown to be highly effective for the sake of high-risk patients, for the sake of your parents and grandparents, for the sake of our economy. We must start treating people with HCQ immediately.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. For decades, a man named Scalia served with distinction at the highest levels of the U.S. government, protecting the lives and freedoms of his fellow Americans. Today, that role is being played by one of Justice Antonin Scalia's sons. Labor Secretary Eugene Scalia is poised to make an extraordinary contribution to the financial security of millions of Americans who have their savings invested in private pension funds. He wants to ensure their managers' investment decisions are solely guided by shareholder value, not some ideological agenda. In response to Secretary Scalia's request for comments, over 200 prominent national security practitioners and other American patriots have urged him to block as well non-transparent investments in Chinese companies. Today is the last day to weigh in and support these important initiatives. Do so by visiting GetLiberty.org and click on the China Existential Threat button. Thanks. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. We've been telling you that this Saturday there's going to be, getting papers in order here. There's going to be a kind of a special showing. It's not the entire movie, but it's a special event about our new movie, In His Image, Delighting in God's Plan for Gender and Sexuality. It's a free event, and you can register at inhisimage.movie, inhisimage.movie. By the way, In His Image is just a incredible piece. You will not want to miss this. This is a great way to start conversations with friends and also in your own family. It's a great way to help your kids understand what's going on. This is a powerful thing. We're featuring a former gay man, Stephen Black, a daughter of a transgender father, Denise Schick, a former transgender, she's female now, Laura Perry, and Walt Heyer. Sorry. Actually, Walt's a good friend of mine. He's a former transgender man. But that's not the only people. It'll be Dr. Michael Brown hosting, Ryan Anderson of Heritage, who's been all over this issue. And I could go on. Our own Abe Hamilton will be in that movie, Everett Piper. So anyway, that just gives you an idea. And so if you have not registered, I hope that you'll do that. And we're eager to have you kind of fold in on this and help us get the word out about it. And as soon as the movie is released, of course, we'll be telling you about that. But it's inhisimage.movie, inhisimage.movie. All right, so I want to go back to some of the other things. I had just a couple of other clips that are not related to each other that I wanted you to hear this morning. There is a Democrat in Georgia named Vernon Jones. He's Black. He was on MSNBC with a Black MSNBC host whose name I don't know right offhand. And they had an incredible exchange because Vernon Jones is a Trump supporter. He's a Black Democrat Trump supporter. So you can imagine that on MSNBC, that didn't go over very well. I wish I could play the whole thing for you. The exchange gets, let's just say it gets hotter and hotter. And it finally ends this way, and I'll let you to decide who actually won the exchange. Let's listen to clip 9.
Are you a paid campaign surrogate? Are you being compensated?
Let me be clear. You get paid to shape a liberal narrative. You get paid to attack this president.
I don't get a dime
for this president. I don't get a dime from the campaign. Everything I've done has been me and based on my principles. And see, that's the problem. When an African-American that's elected official...
Whoa. You're not going to imply that I asked that question because you're Black.
So don't ask me that. You only ask me that because I don't fit your narrative. Never offered anything. I don't want anything from this president. It's what I can do for my country. And you need to accept that many other African Americans and others support this president because of his policies. And to insult me to say, am I getting paid?
I've asked the same question of Democrats who come on MSNBC
and their narrative to keep Blacks silent who happen to support this president. Right. Why can't I be like white liberals or other whites? Nobody questioned they're getting paid.
State representative.
So I have to get paid. Do you ask Democrats? Do they get paid?
I just said.
If you're paid by Joe Biden.
I just said to you.
Have you ever asked any host on your show that they've been paid by Joe Biden?
State Representative Vernon Jones. Representative Jones, thank you. Do come back.
I think a Democrat representative in Georgia, Vernon Jones, maybe won that exchange, don't you think? And I bet that was a real moment for MSNBC. Reminds me, the last time I was on MSNBC, it's been a long time now, I was on with a spokesman for the Human Rights Campaign. And they were making some claim about the Human Rights Campaign is the largest lobbying organization for the LGBT rights movement. Rights is probably... Yeah. Anyway, so very highly, you know, tons of money, tons of influence. And they were trying to make a claim about something. And honestly, I can't remember in this moment what it was. But I certainly, you know, I always go into an interview prepared. I don't always win these back and forths. But on this particular day, this poor guy got his lunch handed to him by me because the truth was not on his side. And so that's what I see with Georgia Democrat Vernon Jones yesterday. He had an exchange about how much he respects President Trump's policies. And I just think that was a moment when MSNBC probably wished the screen would have gone blank because the interview was for a long time. And remember, his host, the guy interviewing him, was also Black. So it was interesting to see two Black men go at it like that. Anyway, so they brought up Biden because basically Vernon Jones says, you know, do you want Biden who's hiding in his basement? He's not capable of running this country. And so I don't often play these things for you. I did, I think, already once this week. But Joe Biden was in a video conference call, and this is the kind of thing that he's doing on a regular basis. But I don't like to play them because, again, I don't like to mock him. But I think we have to face the reality that he is not cognitively able to handle. There's just no way. And I'll give you this example. This is clip 8.
Interject one thing here. When you and I first met, we had a relatively small population, and we called it at the time a Hispanic population, mostly Puerto Ricans, American citizens already. But you know, in the 2020 census, which is now two censuses ago.
Yeah, the 2020 census, which is now two censuses ago. And he just doesn't catch it. He doesn't know. You know, I misspeak a lot on the air. I know I do. Maybe I'll stumble on words or forget, names of people. And that happens, but this is happening to him constantly, and he's just not catching it. He doesn't really know where he is. That was another one that came out a couple of days ago. He got it wrong like twice in a conversation. He didn't catch it. He didn't know where, and he said, I don't know where I am. And so we have a man who's seriously impaired, and that's why his choice of VP is going to be so important. Because whoever is VP is really going to be running things, or at least going to be the figurehead that somebody behind the scenes is going to be, you know, manipulating, because I don't think that Joe Biden is going to be capable. He's not a Barack Obama. So now we're hearing hints that he may go back and now choose Kamala Harris, which she is a left of the left. I mean, that she's in California. You saw her on the campaign trail. She failed miserably because most people didn't like her and did not think she was the right person for certainly the presidency or the Democratic nomination. But now he's thinking about her for vice president, according to his notes, which were captured by someone's video. But now we hear that others in the party are pushing back. Oh, no, we don't. We don't have, you know, something in writing about this. But the air is thick with stories about people in the party. And maybe I'm thinking perhaps from the Obama camp, who don't want Kamala Harris to be the vice president. And I believe there's a push for Valerie Jarrett or Susan Rice. So Valerie Jarrett was actually, the right-hand man. Valerie Jarrett lives with the Obamas. At least she did. I assume she still does. Valerie Jarrett, born in Iran. Used to talk about her a lot when President Obama was president. Leftist father, communist background out of Chicago. Yeah, I know a lot about this. So, who knows? We might be lucky and get Valerie Jarrett, the communist, with Joe Biden, the guy who can't remember or doesn't know where he is. And then Susan Rice, there's a lot to be said about her too. Valerie Jarrett went on with Maria Bartiromo on, I think it was in the last couple of days, it might have been Sunday morning, and did a full-length interview, and Maria, you know, handed it to her pretty thick. And I found myself wondering if she's trying to mainstream herself, because she's very good. These people are Susan Rice isn't as good as Valerie Jarrett. Valerie Jarrett is silky smooth. You think, wow, she's really nice. She's nice. And that's what people like. They want nice. You know how I feel about nice. I say to you all the time, look at what a person does, not what they say. Or even how they say it. Look at what they do. So that's the latest on Biden. I want to turn to a couple of other, I want to talk about a few of your email here in the remaining moments. I also want to tell you that I'm going to be off the air next week. Christian Anderson will be Christian. His official name is J. Christian Anderson. What did I say? Not Anderson. That's the famous author. I'm doing a Joe Biden. J. Christian Adams, who's a very good friend of mine. He'll be hosting Monday through Wednesday. And then we have Fred Jackson and Walker Wildman hosting the other couple of days. So you'll be in very good hands. I'm going to be hosting a conference in Wisconsin, or not a conference, but an evening in Wisconsin. And I'll also be at an important meeting in downtown D.C., which I'll maybe say more about when I can. So that's where I'm going to be, but I know that you'll be fully covered. And meanwhile, tomorrow we're going to be talking about, what are we talking about tomorrow? Adam, remind me. We talked about censorship. Social media censorship with Dan Gaynor of MRC. So you're going to enjoy that. That's going to be more information about what we talked about a little bit today. So this is from Josh, who's in New Mexico. He says, in regard to COVID, he said that the Lee County, New Mexico sheriffs sent out this statement. The Lee County Sheriff's Office fully supports all businesses in Lee County, especially those owned by hometown people. We feel by supporting them, we are giving back to the people who support us day in and day out. We love Lee County. We never want to see a business go under or feel hardships that are beyond their control. So this article that Josh sent describes how they go into restaurants and eat. They order carry out, and they try. They're not going after these businesses that have been forced to pull all these restraints. In fact, they're going in and doing their business there. So God bless the sheriffs from Lee County. A lot of great sheriffs around this country. By the way, there's another letter going to President Trump from lots of doctors. In fact, let's see, it's thousands. Thousands of physicians in all specialties and from all states would like to express our gratitude for your leadership. But they now call the medical shutdown a mass casualty incident. And they go through explaining all the stages of that. And they talk about the effects on the American people. Tens of millions are triaged at the level yellow. Liquor sales have increased by 300 to 600%. Cigarette sales have increased. Rent has gone unpaid. Family relationships have become frayed. And millions of well-child checkups have been missed. But the most urgent one, they talk about the red level. These include 150,000 Americans per month who would have had a new cancer detected through routine screening that hasn't happened. Millions who have missed routine dental care to fix problems strongly linked to heart disease or death. And preventable cases of stroke, heart attack, and child abuse. Suicide hotline phone calls have increased 600%. They're calling for the president to end the lockdown because they say we've had so many casualties, a mass casualty incident. And so that's a whole other set of doctors. And by the way, if you did not see the video of the doctors that Jenny Beth Martin and Tea Party Patriots, the frontline doctors, it will be on our Facebook page again today. I mentioned that earlier. The Breitbart article was excellent on that, and they do a link to that, and you'll want to take time to watch it. That reminds me of an email that I got from Tina, and she's concerned about how we've spoken here about schools. She's asked me to have teachers as guests because she said it's hard to listen to some of the conversations with people who are speculating about issues. She means going back to school without experience, and seem to chastise teachers who have concerns about going back to the classroom. Teachers care very much about the issues you all mentioned about hunger and abuse and the need for interaction. They live with that every day. But by lawmakers saying you have to open, I think they must be assuming precautions will be taken for teachers, but I don't see that happening. She talks about how grocery stores can close and sanitize. Schools don't have the money for that. And she said there are a lot of assumptions. She said teachers are going to have to pay for a lot of that because there's not enough money in the schools. Tina, I don't know if you're a teacher, but you certainly are close to them. And she's really concerned about the precautions taken for teachers. And I would respond to that as quick. This will have to be a quick response, Tina, which you deserve a lengthy one. But I think the problem, of course, as you have heard me say, I believe the stat I saw this week is at least 65 to 70% of Americans, and maybe more, believe that masks are necessary, that the virus is becoming worse and worse, that we need to social distance. People are scared to death. They are scared to death. And they're scared to death for nothing, Tina. It's not that nobody is. Look, if we put in our papers and heard on Fox every night all the people dying of flu, it would be worse. I mean, the stats would be worse. This is an exaggerated crisis. People die all the time from various things, and COVID is not nearly so serious. And there is no reason for people, except that they've been propagandized. You are scared because you've been told every night to be scared. And I want to go back to the article that Daniel Horowitz wrote today. I already quoted it, but Sweden riding high and the triumph of the rational herd immunity approach. Sweden did not wear masks. Sweden did not lock down, and they now are having zero cases. And that is because when you say you have more cases, that's good. You want the thing to spread. That doesn't mean you're getting sick. It means that you are carrying the virus. And that's what herd immunity is all about. The more and more people who actually test positive, the more likely we're to get to that no-death point. So, sorry it was so quick, but there it is.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.